morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking Packers football like we do every Monday, Wednesday, Friday here at Cheesehead TV. And to kick things off today, we have a guest on the phone, on the line right now. We have William Pavletich, author of Green Bay Packers Trials, Triumphs, and Tradition. William, good morning. Do I have your last name pronounced correctly?
Yes, yes. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem. It's good to have you on the show. Now, Mr. Pavletich, this is not your first book on the Packers that has just been recently released. Could you tell us a little bit about your background and the other work you've done?
My day job is I'm a documentary filmmaker, so I enjoy taking the truth and telling stories. And, you know, I've done a lot of stuff for the History Channel, done some other documentaries for public television through the years. And I've also had the pleasure of writing, like you mentioned, a few books. I did one on the history of the Milwaukee Braves, and also I did a book on Lee and Larry Williams, who are surfing pioneers in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, who surf the Great Lakes and are also the co-founders of the Jerry Land Surf Classic.
Very interesting. Surfing in Lake Michigan, huh?
Yes, yes. It's actually very popular, and Sheboygan's on a lot of people's bucket lists for places to surf.
Hard to believe, but that's Wisconsin for you. So in your newest book, Green Bay Packers, Trials, Triumphs, and Tradition, I think it's unique that you take a look at the organization from a financial perspective and its history as a publicly owned team. What made you want to look at the team through that lens?
I think it was, you know, from the aspect that as a storyteller, you know, you want to tell a new story. You want to, you know, focus on something that when a reader who knows a lot about a topic still walks away saying, wow, I had no idea. So the idea that we focused on the men and the women and the community behind the scenes, or as we like to say, behind the curtain off the gridiron, was very important. And it turned out to be a very compelling story. And in a lot of ways, as much, if not more compelling, than the glory on the gridiron.
It's kind of interesting that you're getting ready to publish your new book here, or as you were getting ready, that the Packers went and sold just recently a 250,000 shares of the team in their latest stock sale. Were you able to touch on the new stock sale and the tens of millions of dollars they just raised in your book, or did it just happen too late?
No, actually, ironically enough, I got the green light to write this book 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I was in process of finishing it up, and I was supposed to deliver it on New Year's Eve 2010, but I was behind schedule, which turned out to be a great thing because the book ended on probably the best note possible, and that was the Super Bowl 45 victory. And then also, because the Wisconsin Historical Society Press takes a long time to vet the book and fact check the book, we had time to actually touch on the stock sale and the impact of the stock sale, and also, you know, go into some depth on, you know, the future of the Packers' financial situation with them acquiring land in between the stadium and Highway 41, and also just kind of talk about and project the Packers' financial future, which is in very healthy shape.
You know, every once in a while I hear complaints through the media that it's unfair the Packers get to do something like this, have a stock sale, and that it's, you know, an unfair advantage for the only publicly owned team in the NFL. Have you ever gotten a sense of that in your research?
Not so much because, you know, in today's, you know, professional sports business structure, you know, these high-profile, you know, and financially secure owners who are buying these teams are sinking a lot of their personal money or their personal business money into these franchises, and the Packers don't have that structure. So, you know, everybody still views the Packers as, you know, David versus Goliath, you know, when you're talking even in this case, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. So, you know, the fact that the Packers had their stock sale this past year, nobody really got too worked up because, you know, like a Robert Kraft or a Daniel Snyder or a Jerry Jones, they're just as crafty, you know, playing within the rules of, you know, raising as much money for their personal interests and their personal franchises.
I see Bob Harlan wrote the foreword to the book. Can you briefly describe Mr. Harlan's important role in Packers history and then how he became involved with the book?
Yeah, it was a situation where when, you know, the book was conceived, you know, he was the perfect face for the book. He represented everything that was great about the book and everything that is great about the Packers' financial history. He, you know, came to the Packers in the early 70s under Dan Devine as his assistant general manager, and through the years pretty much had his hands on every aspect of the franchise, you know, with different roles, either they were defined or not defined. But he really became, you know, the guy who knew everything about the franchise, understood how it worked financially, and then he was elevated to become the first team president and CEO who was not a member of the executive committee prior. So the idea that the Packers went against tradition at that point to, you know, essentially elevate one of their own into, you know, that position says a lot. While he was the president and CEO of the Packers, he definitely brought back, you know, on the field, he brought back the winning championship tradition and culture by bringing in Ron Wolf and brought in Mike Holmgren and Brett Favre, and we had the Super Bowl 31 victory. But more importantly, Bob Harlan understood, you know, the financial world of football and the future of, you know, the financial world of football. And he did a lot of revolutionary things, which you look back now and it all looks like it made sense. But, you know, his decision to pull the Packers out of Milwaukee, which he considered his most difficult decision as president and CEO, was because the Packers were projected to, you know, lose tens of millions of dollars if they stayed in Milwaukee. So he had to make that decision and then avoid the PR nightmare by offering the green and gold ticket packages. When, you know, the Packers won Super Bowl 31, he initiated that stock sale afterwards because he saw the future of, you know, what Lambeau Field represented, being only a 10-day-a-year venue that generated revenue. So that stock sale was essentially the seed money for his grand plan of doing the entire Lambeau Field renovation in 2003 that, you know, now has turned Lambeau Field into a 365-day-a-year venue with the pro shop and the restaurant and the stadium tours. And, you know, now the Packers are looking into creating almost an entertainment district, which he was definitely part of those seeds being planted that, you know, you needed to have people coming into your stadium footprint on a daily basis to generate revenue, either by shopping or, you know, hosting events at the atrium that they created under his watch. So he is very important to the history of the Packers, and because of that, we wanted him to be, you know, write the foreword. He was our first choice, and he was great to talk to and interview during the book, and he loved doing the foreword, so it meant a lot to us.
Definitely an influential figure in Packers history. We're talking to William Pavletich, author of the brand-new book, Green Bay Packers, Trials, Triumphs, and Tradition. William, are you an owner of the Packers? Do you own your own share?
Yes, I own a share, my wife owns a share, and both my boys own shares. So yes, we are a family of Packer owners, I guess, if you will.
Fantastic. I've been having guests on the show over the past couple days, and seeing as, you know, training camp is just underway, I'm asking everybody, you know, what's your prediction for the season? How the Packers going to do this year? Not that I'm going to hold you to it.
I'm pretty optimistic. They have, you know, you're definitely getting a sense that they are playing with a chip on their shoulder. You know, it's like if you can have a chip on your shoulder after going 15-1, the Packers definitely seem hungry. So I'm very optimistic. You know, we'll be playing football into January and February.
Great. Before I let you go, how can fans get a copy of your book? What's the best way to get one?
I would say, you know, it's available, you know, nationwide on Amazon.com. and definitely throughout Wisconsin and the Midwest, at wherever fine books are sold. But yeah, I would say up front, like Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Great. Mr. Pavletich, thank you very much, so much for joining us here this morning on Cheesehead TV. And best of luck to you with the sales of your new book, and hope it goes over well.
Thank you very much for having me.
Take care. William Pavletich, author of the book Green Bay Packers Trials, Triumphs, and Tradition, joining us here on Railbird Central on a Friday morning. It's the Friday, the day of family night, so that's what we're going to be talking about on the rest of the episode today. Great to have a guest on the show, but now it's time to talk some Packers football, what's going on the practice field, what's going to be going on tonight. So really cool stuff going on. You know, it's the beginning here of Packers live action. They're going to be hitting tonight. Actually going to be doing some tackling. If you remember last year, kind of because of the brief NFL lockout. Well, the lockout itself wasn't brief, but they only had a brief time to prepare for the start of training camp, just like 4 days into camp, and all of a sudden it was family night, and the Packers really weren't kind of ready yet to get, you know, things fully underway in terms of, like, you know, what they wanted to accomplish in practice, and, you know, were they really ready to hit a whole lot yet. But this year, they're all set, they're all ready. There's going to be some tackling tonight, some live tackling. Sold out crowd, right around 70,000 people going to be packing inside of a Lambeau Field tonight, which is huge. I think this is going to be the largest family night crowd in Packers history, if you can believe that. I mean, we always know the Packers get a big crowd, but 70,000 people for what's essentially a practice always impresses you every year, but more so that the Packers have sold out this year. So be fun. If you're heading to Lambeau Field, great. If not, if you live in the state of Wisconsin, you can watch it on, I think it's the Fox affiliates. I know it is in Green Bay. I guess I'm not sure elsewhere if you live in the Milwaukee, Madison, La Crosse, Eau Claire districts. But, it's on TV in all of them. I'm just not perhaps sure the affiliate. And if you live outside the state of Wisconsin, don't worry. It's going to be streamed live by the Green Bay Fox affiliate, fox11online.com. So all sorts of ways you can check out the action tonight and see the players, you know, get to see the rookies for the first time. It'd be really exciting. It's always fun to see, when they hit for the first time, get to see them come out of the tunnel onto the field for the first time under the bright lights. For a lot of them, it's quite an experience to get 70,000 people for a practice. So really cool times tonight. And you know what? Even better to check out some of the competition position battles that are going on. Of course, there's this huge battle at cornerback. Not Aaron Rodgers. His job's secure. Everybody knows Aaron Rodgers is going to be the starter. Cornerback on defense. So, first of all, you've got Charles Woodson, who's kind of making this move from cornerback to safety. Kind of a part-time move. He's still going to play the slot cornerback position. But when the Packers are in their base 3-4 defense, you're going to see him at safety a little bit. So, be cool to see that once of all. But on top of that, that's opened the door for the rest of the guys' teams. You know, when Charles Woodson used to play as a perimeter cornerback, now he's not going to be doing that so much anymore. So that's opened the door for more playing time for pretty much four guys fighting for this spot, fighting to be the starter. And last year it was Sam Shields kind of the starter. And, you know, all of a sudden it seems like he's kind of fallen out of favor a little bit. His play has plateaued. Last year during the playoffs, he actually was relegated to part-time duty. Nobody's given up on him yet, but he's got to prove his worth. He's got to show he can be on the team and worthy of being a starter and worthy they can trust him putting him out there, the coaches. So, that's one guy fighting for playing time. He's been replaced, kind of temporarily, at least last year in the playoffs, by Jarrett Bush. guy kind of known for being a special teams player, but, you know, has really improved his defensive play as of late, you know, dating back to last year, dating back to the Super Bowl, of course, who had that big-time interception. And so he's in the mix. You know, he was kind of the starter at the beginning of training camp, although the Packers have been kind of running guys in and out. There's Devon House, the guy who was a rookie last year, didn't see a whole lot of playing time, but really making noise so far in training camp, really kind of turning some heads and improving his play leaps and bounds from where he was a year ago. So you've got Devon House, and you know, he's really wants to make an impression, you have to imagine. He's got a good chance of anyone of, you know, winning some playing time. And then you've got this year's rookie, Casey Hayward, a second-round draft choice. A guy the Packers just took in the NFL draft. So, you know, it's you know, all sorts of, you know, competition here. Just exciting. These four guys really duking it out, battling for playing time. On the live blog, Taryn Fertel chiming in on the cornerback battle. Shields appears a product of the pass rush of the Super Bowl year. Yeah, I suppose. Well, I suppose we can say that about all the defensive backs in the secondary that year as well, not just Shields. But I mean, there was good pass rush last year, the Super Bowl year, not so good last year. During the Super Bowl year 2010, all the cornerbacks benefited, whether it's Charles Woodson, Tremont Williams, Sam Shields, you name it, Jarrett Bush, all doing well that year. And, you know, I don't know. Is that the sole reason Shields played well in 2010? Maybe you could say that. You could make that argument just because his play fell off last year. We'll find out what he's made of, you know, pretty soon. All these guys are going to get a lot of playing time during the exhibition season, preseason games. You know, they're going to want to weed out the best players among the group. So John Rahorse says, Jarrett Bush, starting cornerback. Just keep repeating that. I know some people are hating on Jarrett Bush. Maybe not hating, but, you know, I still think with Jarrett Bush, people are living back in 2007. That's not the same Jarrett Bush anymore. Jarrett Bush was a good cornerback last year, a good defensive player. I realize he probably didn't get as much playing time as, you know, Sam Shields, the rest of the cornerbacks on the team. We're talking about a smaller sample size, but Jarrett Bush played well last year. We'll see if he can continue it this year. He's going to have to earn it. Whoever becomes the starting cornerback opposite Tremont Williams, they're going to have to earn it. So John Rayor says, I'm not a hater. He just can't cover that well, but he sure can tackle. He can. Give him credit for that. And I admit Jarrett Bush's shortcomings as well. He's got lost in coverage many times, but I do think he's really improved over the past year or so. We'll see if it continues. So something to keep tabs on tonight, all these cornerbacks. And as far as I'm concerned, the best battle on the team, best position battle, best battle for playing time, whatever, battle for a starting spot, really cool. So what else do we have going on in the world of the Green Bay Packers? A couple news stories yesterday I left in this morning's Packers Daily Links. If you scroll to the bottom right-hand corner of the page, I left a link open to it there. Top story yesterday, B.J. Raji takes up boxing. How about that for a headline? Kind of took people by surprise, I think. I know I was kind of raised my eyebrow when I saw that come across my Twitter feed yesterday. B.J. Raji taking up boxing. Yeah, apparently upon the advice of Julius Peppers, who B.J. Raji talked to at the Pro Bowl last year. NFC teammates during the Pro Bowl. Nothing too exciting about the Pro Bowl game itself, but you know, Raji just talking to his teammates there, trying to learn some tricks of the trade, and gets a suggestion from Julius Peppers, an opponent, take up boxing. So that's what Raji did this offseason. Not that he was, like, huge into fighting anyone or actually gotten to any bouts or anything like that. Just taking up his practice as a means to, you know, just to keep in shape, you know. But also, as he said during interviews, and you can check out the links, learning to be violent. You know, I think as he trying to swing some punches, and he says you can work on technique all you want, but you got to be violent too in the NFL, and that's how you be successful. So, you know, hope it works out for him. We'll see. There's been good reports about PJ Raji so far through camp that he's looking good. You know, he had a really good season during 2010, not so good last year. And again, we could sit here and debate the reasons for why maybe PJ Raji didn't have a good 2011 campaign, at least comparatively. But, you know, hoping he bounces back. So in 2012 here, that he gets a couple more sacks or has a bigger impact in whatever form it might take, whether it's stuffing the run, getting sacks, whatever, hopefully any and all of the above. Other news yesterday, Eric Walden being suspended for the first game of the 2012 season, outside linebacker Eric Walden. And found out, too, that he already had an appeal and it was denied. So it's in stone. It's etched in stone. He'll be missing that season opener against the San Francisco 49ers. You know, we could sit here and talk a little bit about Eric Walden as well. I mean, he does have to earn a job in the roster to begin with. But, you know, it's kind of looking pretty good that he might do that. Perhaps because so far, and again, I realize it's early, but, you know, Nick Perry, the first-round draft choice of the Packers, has been pretty quiet so far. And again, I mean, I realize we're a week into training camp. You can't really draw too many conclusions yet. But, you know, starting tonight, you see what you got in a guy like Nick Perry. You'll see what he's made out of, and we're not quite sure what he's made out of. So, you know, it's not till you see him in a game-type situation, till you see him in a scrimmage like tonight, till you see him in an actual game like you will during the preseason, that we can really start, you know, drawing some conclusions. So, you know, he's been quiet, obviously. You know, not a good sign, perhaps. But, you know, it's nobody should draw any conclusions yet. You know, let's wait to see him in action. And I guess what I'm saying is, if he continues to be quiet, you know, Eric Walden might end up getting a little bit more playing time this year again, and the Packers might lean on him. Now, they can't lean on him for that season opener against the 49ers. Nick Perry better be ready. But Eric Walden, though, could be, you know, setting himself up for a roster spot once again, just because he's, you know, has some experience. He's been a starter in the past, things like that. You know, I'm not exactly sure what the Packers are going to do with his roster spot, because, you know, and we can talk a little bit about the other suspended players on the team, Mike Neal and Anthony Hargrove. These guys don't count against the roster when they're suspended, you know, so they're not going to count against the 53-man roster. The Packers can have other guys to take their spot, you know. All of a sudden, when they come off a suspension, then the Packers are going to have to make a move. They're going to have to decide, okay, we're going to have to cut someone or put someone on injured reserve in order to bring Anthony Hargrove off a suspension, Mike Neal off a suspension. But are they going to do that just for 1 week with a guy like Eric Walden? You know, will they just, you know, say, well, it's only 1 week, we'll just put him on the 53-man roster? Or will it be a situation where, you know, they're going to have somebody just take a spot for 1 week, then they got to cut somebody a week later? A little bit of a risky move there. I have no clue what the Packers are going to do. I guess we won't find out for a couple weeks yet as to, you know, when cuts start happening and when they're trying to piece together that 53-man roster after the last preseason game. So we wait and see here. We wait and see and until we find out. And it's as good as anybody's guess is as good as mine. So no clue what the Packers will do there. But, yeah, I see... John Rahor on the live blog here saying Perry being quiet. They were talking about it last night on Cheesehead Radio. Haven't heard he stinks like McClellan at Bears camp, but we haven't heard anything about Perry. Yeah, you know, the word coming out of the Chicago Bears camp is that Shea McClellan, their first-round draft choice, hasn't been performing so well. And you know, I think it is too early yet to be making any judgments like that as well, no matter if it's the Chicago Bears or not. You know, they haven't played a game yet, but it's certainly not a good thing that these guys aren't making positive impressions. You wish that they were. You know, you wish they were making headlines like Jarrell Worthy and Mike Daniels and Casey Hayward. Good things are being said about those guys. Not so much about Nick Perry, but like I said, you know, starting tonight, we'll see. I mean, the pads go on tonight. They'll be tackling tonight, live action. You know, they might not be able to get sack the quarterback, put any hits on Aaron Rodgers or anything like that. But you can tell if he gets there, and that's all we really want to see from a guy like Nick Perry. So, you know, definitely excited to watch that. And who knows? You know, in this battle at outside linebacker for position spots, I think I maybe have written this. I can't remember if I've said it on Railbird Central. Can we already pencil in Desmond Moses for a roster spot, the undrafted rookie this year? I think it's a pretty good bet that's going to happen. You know, just every day you hear positive things about Desmond Moses, the rookie outside linebacker out of Tulane, how he's impressing and how well he's playing. And, you know, more positive things are being said about him at this point than Nick Perry. Could it be that Desmond Moses is a under-the-radar starter for the Packers? I'm not going to go that far yet, but I'll throw it out there, see if it sticks. Again, we find out starting tonight. The pads come on. I'm as excited to see Desmond Moses as I am Nick Perry. I'm excited to see all these guys, you know, especially the young players, the rookies who you've never seen play professionally before. You know, it's kind of weird, you know, like I should be excited to see a guy like Aaron Rodgers, the league MVP. You know, and he's such a great player. Obviously, I acknowledge that, but I know what Aaron Rodgers is. I know he's going to be good. It's like, it's almost blasé. You know, I'm not even that excited about seeing him just because I'm more excited to see these rookies, see their potential, see what they have, see what they bring to the table than I am about the stars on the team like Aaron Rodgers, Clay Matthews. I know those guys are going to be good. John Rahor says, who will be the rising star this year because of family night? Yeah, doesn't it seem like every year somebody sticks out? Last year it was the undrafted rookie Brandon Ross. Brandian? How do they pronounce it? Brandon or Brandian? It looks like Brandian, but do they pronounce it Brandon? Anyway, last year during family night, which actually only lasted, 10, 20 minutes long because storms ended up interrupting it. But before they did, they got a good 10, 20 minutes of action in. Brandon Ross intercepts Aaron Rodgers during family night. Didn't he take it back for a touchdown, a pick six? So that you know, in the limited playing time, that was the big play of the night. But it seems like every year somebody ends up being the star of family night and really kind of elevates their profile a little bit. You know, Brandon Ross, even though he didn't make the roster last year, turned that into a spot on the practice squad, got to stick with the Packers all last season. You know, spent time in Green Bay learning things like that, and that's certainly good for his development. You know, he's back this year. He's trying for a spot on the team. He's on the roster. I don't know whether he can make it. Who knows? Maybe he spends time on the practice squad again. But we'll see who tonight's star is. Hopefully it's like some other unknown undrafted rookie. You know, the guys you hardly hear about. How about other guys in the secondary? There's all these undrafted rookies you hear nothing about. Otis Merrill, Deion Turner, Micah Pellerin, and Sean Richardson. How about those names for you? If you're a hardcore fan of the team, you know who they are. They're all undrafted rookies, all fighting for a roster spot. You know, nobody you really hear of too much during training camp so far.
just because, you know, they're unknown and, you know, they're still learning, things like that. But who knows, you know, when the pads go on, maybe it's their chance to stick out tonight, make an impression, something like that. But yeah, I'm excited to check it out. Actually, I'll have to watch Family Night on replay tomorrow morning. I'm not going to be watching it. It's probably the first time in years I haven't watched Family Night live. Going to be doing a book signing tonight in Madison with former Milwaukee Brewers second baseman Jim Gantner at Warner Park in Madison. If you happen to be in Madison, come on out, check it out. I'd be really happy if you did. We're going to raise a little bit of money for the American Red Cross. It's all for a good cause, so I'm DVRing Family Night. I'll be watching it Saturday morning. So, but those of you who will be watching Family Night, enjoy it. I know you will. Make sure to check out the live blog here at CheeseheadTV.com. We'll have a live blog going, discussion, analysis, chat, following along with the game, just as we always do all the time here, at least for the past several years at Cheesehead TV. So I'll be doing that once again. But that's going to do it for this Friday episode of Railbird Central. Wanted to thank once again William Pavletich, author of Green Bay Packers Trials, Triumphs, and Tradition, for joining the show. I encourage you to go check that book out, whether it's on Amazon, you get in the bookstore, or wherever. I got a copy, and it's really cool. It's like over 300 pages, even more than that, 350. Full-color photos. You know, good history of the team. Check it out. And on behalf of everybody else here at Cheesehead TV, on behalf of John Rahor, I'm Brian Caribou. We'll see you later, everyone. We'll be back again on Monday talking about recapping Family Night and continuing to talk about training camp as well. So we'll see you later, everyone. Have a good Friday. Have a good weekend. Go, Pack, go. I leave you today with a song called Valley of the Jig by String Cheese Incident on Cy Fidelity Records. See you, everyone.